As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I think that we certainly in some ways have taken a step back, but we've identified and seen some of the things that are deficient in our group. We've been around long enough now where we've seen them, and we want to make those improvements. It's no time to feel sorry for yourself. It's time to get back to work, and I have a lot of faith in Kyle as a general manager and Sheldon as a coach. Our ownership group and the support that they give us, and our fans, they're frustrated. I mean, it's been 4 years in a row now we've gone out in the first round. Our fans in Toronto, though, it's been 16 years since they've won a round. It's been 53 years since we've won a cup. So you inherit a little bit of history here. And so you have to be understanding for a fan base that is excited and wants to be rewarded and get results. This is a results business. We're determined to get those results.
Well, James, that was Brendan Shanahan at the end of the Leafs season officially. That's the first time there's been a situation like that where the end of season availabilities are done on video. So what was like your big takeaway from Shanahan, Dubas, Keefe, 10 players spoke? What was kind of your impression? Where were your feelings at when this all kind of came to an end officially?
Well, you're kind of on these things, you're trying to read the tea leaves because they're not going to come out and say, we're trading this guy and we're trading that guy and we're not re-signing this person and that person, even though Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh did a little bit of that.
Yeah, I love him.
He's wonderful, you know, and you know what, he's good for the media and he's had a really good career as a executive. And, you know, that clip from Shanahan's, and that's a good one to use. That's one of the more interesting ones. And that's one of the clips where management's kind of taking ownership of what's happened and saying they're going to fix it. There was a lot of, I thought from Dubas, there was a lot of kind of defensiveness maybe. And he was kind of, you know, he had some of these, he had the stat about the defensive depth scoring. And I don't know, it just felt like the wrong time to bring some of that stuff out. You know what I mean? He was talking about some of these stats and stuff like that. And...
Well, that was, I asked him about the ability to build a winning team with four players eating up half the cap, and he kind of went into a tangent about their depth scoring being better than we think it is, which he acknowledged was kind of a tangent. But I think what's interesting to that point is you go back to last year, and he went out of his way almost to the point where it didn't feel genuine of taking ownership and blame for everything. He's like, the penalty kill, my fault. This is my fault. This is my fault. And it almost felt like just because this time you could actually point to some things and say, this is actually on his shoulders. There was a little bit less of that. Like he defended Cody Ceci again. He kind of defended maybe the wrong word, but he went out of his way to talk up, you know, the way Tyson Barrie played after the coaching change. There just wasn't as much of that ownership over things in that way. And yet I'm not sure it would be really tough to come out and say, you know what, that Barrie trade, man, I shouldn't have done that. And I thought Cody Ceci could play in the top four. What a mistake. Like it's hard to really do that as a GM. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I, yeah.
It just doesn't come across as well doing it that way.
I just think, I don't think you have to take ownership of every specific thing, but I think generally speaking, you could have, there could have been some of that. And I think, you know, Shanahan's even taken ownership of what's happened the last 16 years and the last 53 years, and which, you know, he's talked about in the past that he didn't want to do, and that isn't their legacy. I just think that the fan base wanted kind of a little bit more, I don't know, hope coming out of those availabilities than they got. You know, I think you know, reading social media and whatever, fans were very frustrated with what was said there. And it's, I mean, it's, I still don't have an amazing sense of what the next step is going to be here. You know, I didn't come away from that thinking they're for sure going to make a lot of big changes. And I also, I don't know, like, it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility that they keep relatively the same group together for next season. And I'm sure on the podcast we're going to debate whether that's the right move or not.
Yeah, and I think what to your point, they didn't kind of come out and set a direction for where they're going to go. Now, the counter to that is it was a couple days after the season ended. They probably don't know. And like you said, it might not be wise to come out and say, you know what, this isn't working. But I guess you could acknowledge that maybe we're going, there had to be maybe a little bit more self-reflection of maybe what we've been doing here needs some adjustment. Maybe we've been wrong on certain things. Maybe we pushed too far in the direction of skill. Maybe we need to think about like making our roster a little bit more diverse in terms of the types of players that are on there. Maybe our core does need adjustment. Maybe like there could have been a little bit more of that. And I think what's interesting is you look back, or I think back to last year again, and one of the things that was very striking when you had Kyle Dubas taking ownership over everything and you had Mike Babcock not doing that. And I always felt at the time like that wasn't a great look. And yet it was also like 2 days after the year. Maybe like you need some time to really think about it and plan, and not just like you could do. Imagine if they came out and basically did what Jim Rutherford did and been like, man, like Tyson Berry, like what a mistake that was for us. And like the way that, you know, he kind of came out and critiqued Justin Schultz, and it might not play well in the very big picture. Like it might satisfy some fans and TV and media and us in the short term, but it might not be the right strategy when you're actually in charge of a team in this kind of market. No?
Well, and
I don't know.
Like it's 2 or 3 days after their season ended. I'm sure they hadn't fully mapped out what the plan forward was.
Right.
You know, exactly. But the flip side to what you're saying is I don't think they had to defend individual things, you know, say that CC actually played well. And
well, it was like nothing was wrong. Like I can't actually recall, aside from like very team wide things, we need to find consistency, our regular season mentality has to change. There wasn't like a lot of criticism about people, and maybe that's they're just not going to do that. Like maybe it's just not smart in this market to come out and say Frederik Andersen wasn't good enough. I just feel like you can be a little bit more honest with people, because like fans aren't dumb. Like fans are as smart as anyone, like especially like the hardcores listening to this and, you know, reading all kinds of coverage. Like if you came out and said, you know what, Frederik Andersen, like we like the way he rebounded in this series, but we really need him to be more consistent during the regular season. We need him to really be our backbone, and that just wasn't there at certain points during the year, and we're gonna have to figure out, you know, if he's the right guy for us. Like I feel like you can kind of maybe do a little bit more of
I think they're probably thinking though that you throw any little bit of red meat out to the media and then all of a sudden, you know, if they question the core or the strategy in any minor respect, that soundbite's going to be talked about and played over and over and over again for months. Yes. So I don't know. Just the tone of it just seemed a bit strange. I think that they're very frustrated with this team. I know that they're very frustrated with this team. They feel like it should be better than it is. And, you know, it's almost like, I don't know. I mean, like, it's like, you know how, like, sometimes you put tons and tons of work into a story or something and it just doesn't turn into what you wanted it to be or how much work you put into it. Sure. It's like the Leafs have put so much into thinking about this roster and creating it and whatever. And, you know, without spending more time off the record talking to them, it feels, you know, the concern I would have as a fan is that maybe there's a little bit of denial there that there's what's wrong with this team. And the concern would be that they don't make many changes to the roster. Like, my concern listening to that press conference as a fan would be, does this mean, you know, you say you still believe in what you're doing and the path and everything. Does that mean that we're just going to see if this group can do it again next year? And if they do that, then that's really probably Dubas putting his job on the line. You know, if they don't make many changes and say this group's going to get it done and they don't, it's not going to look good.
Well, I think that's a good place to start. I think some of the defensiveness, combativeness, whatever you want to call it, came from Kyle Dubas. And I think that that's probably because more so than at any point probably in his time, and he hasn't been the GM for that long, just 2 years, but he's facing a lot of heat now, you know, as to whether the team that he's built and had some say over shaping is going to work. How fair do you think it is at this point? He's only been the GM for 2 seasons. He's been around the organization since 2014, but obviously there was a different GM in charge. Like, how fair do you think the criticism of him right now is?
Well, I think that I think it's somewhat overblown. And I get that people are frustrated and there's a lot of anti-analytics sentiment and a lot of kind of old school hockey sentiment. And you know what, Jonas, I don't think you can underestimate too, when you're in a market like this and you have a lot of former players and powerful former executives that are on the radio and on TV, and they're saying this stuff over and over and over again. And there's it's really interesting with Dubas, because, you know, like I spent the last, I was away at the lake the last few days. I didn't write anything after the end of season availabilities. It's been such a weird summer, just with, you know, there being hockey in the middle of August. But, you know, when I was at the lake, I spent a lot of time on the phone just talking to people with different teams and, you know, around the league. And I talked to some former Leafs players and, you know, some people that are really close to the team right now. And, you know, the perception of Dubas is it's very polarizing. You know, he's like one of these people that's still at the center of this debate around the league. And it feels like there's a lot of people that really, like, if you're a younger executive in the NHL and who kind of subscribes to not just analytics, but different ways of doing things and thinking about things differently, you still believe in Kyle Dubas's vision, and you still feel like, you know, he had some tough cards dealt to him last summer, which, I mean, we can talk about that a little bit, but like how difficult their summer was last year, trying to clear a cap space and sign people and things like that. But then if you talk to more older school people, there's a lot more skepticism about Dubas. And, you know, I really feel like this off season and next season is going to be a very real referendum on, is what he's trying to do with the Leafs working or not? Because, you know, while you can make an argument that this year he had his, you know, one hand tied behind his back with Marlowe and Zaitsev and a couple of the other things that had to happen, it's very much going to be his roster next year. I mean, there's not a lot of, you can't point to a lot of things with the team this offseason and next year that are going to be, you know, Lou things, other than maybe the poor drafts. So, you know, this is really kind of going to be Kyle Dubas's stand here with what he does with his team.
Well, I guess if you're going back to last summer, you can tie back to Lou, obviously the Patrick Marleau trade, which cost them a first round pick, the Nikita Zaitsev trade, which, you know, you have to give up Connor Brown, you take back Cody Ceci.
They were going to trade Connor Brown anyway. Like they were looking at trading Connor Brown for a second or third round pick anyway. Like they were tight on the cap and.
Right, but that's a decision. Like you can trade someone else. Like you don't have to trade Connor Brown.
But it wasn't a Zaitsev thing. Like because they got back a third round pick in that trade. That was kind of just like.
Right, but like you had to unload that contract and.
Yes. Yes.
That's not.
But so you had to unload it in part because you paid your young guys so much money and you didn't bridge any of them and.
Right, and that's on Dubas in the front office. And like that's one of the tricky things when you look at this big picture since he's been in charge. One of the reasons like I thought it was a smart move at the time, and I still think it was the right move, is I thought that there would be a way that he approached these things, those contracts, maybe in a more forward-thinking kind of way than Lou Lamoriello. And maybe the conditions just, it was never going to happen just because you had these young players who are coming up and they're being like, why am I taking so much less when I'm one of the best players on the team? Like maybe that was just inevitable. But I think when you look at, you know, the way he's judged, it feels like it's gone a little too far as far as the perception that he's so unconventional. It's not like so out of the realm the way that they've built the team. I think the little things you could point to is they've gone so far in skill and speed everywhere. And they've kind of looked past a little bit of that old school stuff you're talking about. Like they've looked past a little bit of like the intangible stuff. The reason like Mike Babcock loved Roman Polak, the reason like that Lou Lamoriello signs Ron Hainsey, like they've kind of looked past a little bit of the stuff that's not just talent. And I feel like that, to me, is a fair criticism of Kyle Dubas.
Well, it comes down like to this. It comes down to this, Jonas. Like you know, I've gone back and I was looking at some of our coverage from last summer, and the talk was they had to fix their cap situation. They had to have enough cap space to sign Marner, Kapanen, and Janssen, and they had to try and fix the defense. And the answer for them, in terms of signing the young players, was they all got more than we were expecting. And the answer to fixing the defense was Tyson Barrie. And I remember immediately after that trade happened, talking to people with other teams, and they were like, this is not the player that they need. This is not what's missing from their lineup, which led to them struggling in the playoffs or you know, not being able to have a playoff run. This is not the answer for them. And those people ended up looking really prescient. You know, if you go back and look at the column I wrote after they traded for Barrie, you know, I said in there, other people around the league don't think this is going to work. And it didn't end up working. And there probably wasn't enough skepticism in the market about the Barrie trade than there probably should have been.
Well, myself included, the way I looked at it, I think, was they were in a tough position as to where they were going to find that player. And I kind of felt like what they were trying to do is let's just add talent. Like, let's just add another talented player onto our team. And that is going to make us better. Because like they were obviously and remain weak on the right side. Let's just get like another right shooting defender who can play a lot of minutes. He's good. He's got skill. He can move the puck. He can put up points. Let's just get that guy onto our team and that will make us better. And I overlooked, and I think they overlooked, clearly, what you're talking about, the fit part. That, like, I thought about it in terms of, like, other sports. I thought about it, like, in baseball and basketball. Like, in basketball, just get as many good players as you can and, like, figure out the fit stuff later. And in hockey, I think you can – I'm not sure that works all the time. Like, you do need, like, specific skill sets for the roles that you're going to play. And it was – pretty clear very quickly that Tyson Barrie just wasn't going to be able to do what you're talking about, to be able to basically defend. Like they needed someone who was, we talked about it last summer, they needed someone who was good defensively to help them that way, and he wasn't.
Who's your D pair that you're going to play 25 minutes a game, 20 minutes at 5-on-5 against the other team's top lines? Who was like that? Was that question was never answered.
Yeah, I should have thought about it that way. Yeah,
they have never had an answer. You know, they tried playing Barry with Muzzin. You know, you answer that, like, why did Hall work so much better with Muzzin than Barry? Because Hall was, you know, bigger and able to close guys out more and is more of a complementary to what Muzzin can do than Barry is.
Well, and obviously they believed, and Dubas said this at the time, that they could kind of salvage Cody Ceci. And maybe, like, if he was on your second pair all year, it's still maybe a stretch, but it's not terrible. And Dubas, like, in that season-ending avail we were talking about, he mentioned, like, some of these tracking stats that we don't have access to suggest he's better than people think he is. And I don't have any reason to doubt that. Like, defensively, I think there's probably some stuff you can point to. It was the same with Nikita Zaitsev. But the flaws feel like too much. Like, I think you pointed out a lot of times, if he's on your third pair, fine. Like, that's okay. He kills penalties, plays 15 minutes a game, okay. But it's like when you ask him to do too much, it goes too far.
Yeah. Well, some of the smart people I talk to around the league talk so much about strength of competition and how important it is. And, yeah, you know, the difference between if you're facing a fourth line or a first line is like, it's like you're playing a completely different game. And the players that can face first lines and not get crushed are so much more valuable than the players that can't do that. And the Leafs need more players that can play those tough minutes.
Well, but you know, part of this it goes back to some of those contracts. They were betting on their young players. Like, they bet on Johnsson to be like he was halfway through last year. They were betting on Kapanen taking a step. They were even betting, like, Nylander was great. You can question his playoffs. Marner had kind of an okay season by his standards. Obviously still great for 95% of the players in the league. Tavares, same thing. But, like, I think you can boil it down to those contracts haven't totally worked.
Well, I mean, the Johnsson one's a miss.
The Johnsson one, for sure. Well, it's early. Like, that's a bet that he's going to outplay that. And it's the same thing with Kerfoot. Like, they gave Kerfoot a 4-year contract. Like, he had been in the league 2 years. Right. And they basically bet on, this guy is good. Like, this guy can be our third line center.
And I'm sure, and like, he was just, some people, yeah, listening probably think we're, like, in the weeds too much here talking about. But, like, if you give Johnsson an extra million over, like, I thought they were just going to bridge Johnsson on, like, a 1 or a 2 year contract and give him a really low number. And that could have freed them up, you know, $1 million, $1.5 million of cap space. I mean, there's all this hand wringing and all this. People are so upset over how much more Marner is getting than what he should have got. I mean, what should he have got? $9 million or something? So he got an extra.
Yeah, it's not that crazy.
He got an extra 1.8. I mean, it's not ideal. But I think I'd rather overpay Marner 1.8 than overpay Johnsson 1.5, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, at least you're getting an elite talent locked in for 6 years. But there's all, yep, there were these decisions around the margins where they spent a lot of money that they probably didn't have to, and they probably could have used that cap space elsewhere.
Well, and the other thing is, like, you need those guys to be awesome. And outside of Matthews in the playoffs, they weren't. Like,
I thought Tavares was pretty good.
I know. I saw that in your story today. If people haven't read it, you did a staying or going piece that was really good. I don't know if I think that traces back to game two when he had like 10 shot attempts and like everything was in tight. I don't think he had a great series. And even Sheldon Keefe pointed out that the reason, like, he felt like he had to go with Tavares, Marner, Matthews, is that the Tavares lines weren't working. They were getting outplayed. So I don't think he had a great playoffs. He was fine, but, like, you need those guys to be the biggest advantage you have in a series like that is you have Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares. And that wasn't, like, a huge advantage. And that, to me, like, you can boil it down to that in some ways. And Frederik Andersen, again, like, you can point to his save percentage, fine. he was the second best goalie in the series. And obviously Columbus played two goalies, but of the creases, of the two different creases, he was second best. I don't know. Sometimes, like, to me, it's not so much more complex than that. I don't know. Is that too simplistic?
Well, it's like the Leafs had the more expensive goalies, the more expensive star players. They were probably spending more in a lot of areas than Columbus was. And, you know, I thought watching the series, I wondered if maybe the biggest flaw in paying so many guys so much money is that you can neutralize players like that with players who make much less money. You know, it's going to be like, I think in hockey, we're starting to go in this direction, but we're not fully there. But the kind of money ball philosophy where every dollar gets allocated in a way that, you know, guys are outperforming their contracts. It's pretty hard to outperform an $11 million contract. It's pretty tough. And
yes,
you know, Columbus has guys like Riley Nash and Gavrikov that don't make a lot of money, but are really good at making sure that $11 million players can't make a big impact in a series like that. And maybe part of what the Leafs need is they need some more guys that can completely neutralize the other team.
Well, yeah. Like Boone Jenner and like it's a tough balance. So like every team wants Marner. Every team wants Matthews. Like that's the hardest stuff to get. And it feels like the stuff around the edges is a lot easier to get. And it's funny you mentioned Moneyball. I actually just reread it. I just finished it. I read it when it first came out, and I've kind of reread it, and it's really interesting given the way that hockey's gone. And one of the things that they look at, obviously, with Oakland is they found like all and continue to find like all these inefficiencies in the way people look at baseball players. And it got me thinking about the way Dubas has kind of looked at some of the players that he's brought in. Like one of the Billy Beane's kind of strategies was a lot of what scouting looks at with baseball players doesn't matter. Like it's stupid. Like, you know, one of the guys they bring up in the book, like he's huge. He's a big dude. He doesn't look like a baseball player. And Billy Beane's point is like, who cares? Like, and I wonder if there's been like a little bit too much of the, we're just going to get all these skill guys because we think that's going to be the way forward. And maybe that's not as much of an inefficiency as it's perceived, or we think it is.
The book gets into all these like weird reject players, right? Like there's Bradford who throws the sidearm that no one wants him because he looks strange. And then there's the, what's his name? Yeah. Hattenberg or whatever.
Scott Hatterberg.
Who they changed positions and because they, you know, like his bat because he gets on base or whatever. And, obviously, the Leafs are looking at things that we don't have the ability to see. And there are things that they like about guys like Martin Marincin and Cody Ceci, who they fail the eye test a lot of the time, but they're passing the numbers test. But, you know, I don't know. I wonder where the Leafs rank around the league in their internal stats. Like, I wonder where, like, we can see expected goals and Corsi and Fenwick and scoring chances and all this stuff that's on Natural Stat Trick that we look at a lot. I wonder how much different the Leafs numbers are than those. And because, like, in those numbers, the Leafs are not an elite team. Like, it's not like the Leafs are, like, top two or three overall in expected goals or scoring chance share or... It's not like they're completely crushing the league in that stuff.
It doesn't feel like, James, like it doesn't feel like they have, like, to go back to that book, is like, and they still do it today. Like, you can look at Oakland's team today. Like, they still have all these guys where you're just like, how do they find this guy? Like, where did they find Ramon Laureano? And, like, where are these guys coming from? And I don't know that you can look at the Leafs yet under Kyle Dubas and say, like, aside from Justin Hall, and that's a really good example.
Well, like, Nick Robertson's a good example. Like, there's a guy they pull from the draft, you know, and has the monster.
Yeah, but I guess, like, last summer, James, like, you almost need to be able to find some guy that we don't think is much, plop him onto your lineup and we're like, how did they find this
guy? So there was like, yeah. So like they need, I mean, Mikheyev is one example, I guess.
Okay. So that's two examples. So my point doesn't make any sense.
No. I think you're right. No, I think that like they almost needed like Nick Petan or Agostino or who are some of the defensemen they brought in, like Kevin Gravel. I mean, who obviously had a really serious illness and it ruined his whole season, or they kind of needed some of those guys to really, I mean, Justin Hall's an example. Like Justin Hall's Babcock thought the guy couldn't play at all and scratched him almost the entire year last year. And then he's on your shutdown pair by the end of the season with Muzzin and playing really well. And, you know, so it's not like they haven't found any of those pieces, but they're going to need a lot more of them, and they're going to need to stop. This is hindsight talking too, because I like Andreas Johnsson, but they're going to need to Andreas Johnsson can't outperform a $3.4 million contract. Like he's not going to be able to do that. Like I almost wonder with a guy like that, if you just like, don't try and outsmart yourself. Just give him the bridge deal for 2 years at $2 million. If he outperforms it, then great. Like you decide if he's worth the money at that point, but the money you're saving, you know, in the second 2 years of a 4-year deal, it's not going to be worth it if he doesn't perform through the, you know, it's,
you know what that speaks to, James? I think that speaks to two things. I think that speaks to one, looking at everything in a very big picture sense. So you're looking at those two deals and you're being like, you know what? These guys hit over those 3-4 years, we're going to get value, because like if Kapanen becomes a 25 goal scorer, Johnsson becomes like a 50-60 point player, those contracts are going to look really good. And I think the other part about it is we want to take care of the players. Like we want these guys to feel comfortable. We want them to know that they're important, that they're here long term. And maybe there's like, maybe you just can't do that. Like maybe to credit Lula Morello, and granted,
you can pay guys more than they're worth to make them feel happy. Like
I think that's a losing,
right. It's a losing strategy. That's a losing strategy to do that. It has, right. You gotta think, and I'm sure to some extent they are thinking of it like this. It's just, we're guessing to some extent how they're looking at this, but whatever black box they've got that they're using in terms of the analytics that they've got, the end result has to be what you pay guys is less than the value they give you. You can't have everyone making exactly what they're worth. Then you're just, you're the definition of an average NHL team. They need some outperformances on the contracts they've got. And I don't think they had enough of those this year.
Well, we can look at it just quickly. Hyman is one. Mikheyev is one, although he played 39 games. So, I don't know. Muzzin is probably one. Justin Hall is one, for sure. He was making, like, nothing this year. Is there anyone else? Like, Spezza?
Yeah, I mean, Spezza was fine. I mean,
and you know what? Like Matthews is worth that much money, but he's not like, he might be worth 12, or you know what I mean? Like he's not. It's really tough for those guys at the top. Like Nylander probably outperformed his contract, but like not by any crazy stretch. It's really tough for those guys at the top, especially to outperform those contracts. Like it comes back to that, what you talked about, like for Tavares to be worth $11 million, he basically has to have that 47 goal, 88 point season every year. Doesn't he?
I mean, maybe not quite that much, but I mean,
40 and 80.
Yeah. Like he's going to have to be really good. I mean, I think Matthews did outperform his contract. I mean, he was on pace for 55 goals. Like, Matthews was probably a $15 million player this year, or 16 or whatever, something that doesn't exist. But the problem is, like, it's not, other teams around the league aren't paying anybody $16 million cap hit. So,
well, I mean, I like, know, Ryan O'Reilly is getting like 7 and change, and Barkov's so, getting 5.9. Like, it's tough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, Jonas, we're half hour in. I think we should talk about kind of, so we've kind of talked through what the problems are. I mean, I think solutions can be something that we talk about. And I think that one way they can find more of these inefficiencies and more of these value guys is they're going to need to turn over some of the roster. Like they have a lot of players signed and under control. they basically have a full lineup once they get their RFAs signed. Like, it's not like there's a whole bunch of empty roster spots to be filled, right?
Yes.
Like,
yep.
So the only way, and I think that free agency this year, potentially there's going to be a lot of bargains there because there's a lot of teams that are capped out. There's going to be a lot of teams that can't spend a lot of money. The UFAs that sign are probably going to be signing for less than they would have if the cap was higher. And it's not a very shocking thing to say. The Leafs cannot be players in that UFA bargain bin if they have a full roster and they're capped out. They cannot be aggressive shoppers in free agency. They cannot take advantage of the fact that free agents are going to be cheaper. So they have to clear some players in order to be players there. If they don't, then their competition, you know, whether it's Philly or Boston or Columbus or whoever, they're going to get those players. They're going to potentially get those value buys, and the Leafs aren't going to be in that marketplace. That, to me, that's the bottom line for why they need to make some changes and move some salary out here.
Well, so then the question becomes how significant.
Yeah.
Do those changes, or are those changes?
That's the question. And I guess that's the question of this summer for this team, for me, is how deep do you have to cut to change things?
Well, and so you can look at this two ways, I think. You can look at this season and say, well, you know what? It's a five-game series after a five-month break. And I actually liked the way Shanahan responded to that when he was asked something along those lines. And he's like, well, that's what it was. Like, that's sports. Like, that's how it goes. And I think you can look back to the regular season and how meh and disappointing it was, and look back to even the year before, and it was the same kind of thing. And so you wonder if, like, at the heart of this thing, if there is something wrong, and that speaks to that those core four guys, and whether you need to take one piece out and try to get more balance elsewhere, or if you just kind of keep tinkering around the margins and keep trying to fix the Tyson Berries and the Cody Ceci's and the Kapanens and the Johnsons. I lean towards the latter. Where do you kind of sit?
It's a difficult question to answer without getting into, like, I think you only trade a quote unquote core piece if it's a good trade. Like, if you can find a deal that makes sense.
Well, and so to stop you right there. So a good example of what not to do, again, hindsight being what it is what they did with Kadri last summer, where they basically said, like, this is our chip to fix the issue on defense. This is the best trade we can do. This is the best one we see out there. We tried one. It was blocked. This is the best we can do. Let's just do it. And it feels like that's the kind of move you can't make again, where you're just doing it because, like, you're doing it.
It's the same as, like, you can't lose all of your contract bets with guys like Johnsson and Kapanen, and you can't lose your trades. I mean, how are you getting better if you're losing on, like, you can't. We'll see what Kerfoot turns into, and we'll see how Kadri ages and all those kinds of things. But, you know, the story of that trade is that the Leafs needed a right shot defenseman that could help make them better, and they didn't really get one. So if they would have got a defenseman who made them better in their top four.
Right. That's when it's okay, James. Like, it would have been okay if Kerfoot is, like, a slight downgrade from Kadri, but they get this defenseman who just solves their needs. That would have been fine.
Even if it's not like a really solid. Yeah. Even if it's like a really solid three or four kind of defenseman. It's not like they needed, like, a number one D in that trade. They needed someone to come in and especially if it was someone that they potentially could have kept. And that's another thing that other teams really didn't like about that trade, is they're like, they're only going to have Barry for, like, 1 year. Like, he's not what they need. And
you're never barely get to him.
No. It's going to be fascinating to see what he gets in free agency.
But so that's why I think, like, when you look at the possibility of trading, it really is just Nylander, clearly. They're not trading Matthews. They can't trade Tavares. Kyle Dubas has come out and said they're not trading Marner. I'm not sure. We should get into that whole thing. But so it comes down to maybe trading Nylander. And I think you have to be really fucking careful when you're thinking about trading someone like that, because you kind of have to get back, like, what you're talking about, like, that perfect piece. And how many perfect pieces are there out there? Because even the guys you look at and you're like, that guy would be like Seth Jones. Like you look at him and you're like, man, like that would solve all their problems. And Seth Jones is awesome. He's in the right bracket. He's on a good contract, but he's only signed for 2 more years. And then he's a free agent and he's going to want $9-10 million, whatever. And so like, there's all those little complexities where it's hard to like find like a perfect trade. You know what I mean?
That's why they can't go into this offseason and say, we're trading this guy, this guy, and this guy.
Yeah.
They have to go. I think they need to go in with, we're keeping these 5 players. Everyone else is potentially available. What deals can we find? And do they make us better or not? And if the answer is they make us better, then you do them. And if the answer is they don't make us better, you don't do them. And that's a really simplistic way. But I wonder if they went into last season thinking we have to trade Kadri for a defenseman and they weren't able to find the trade that they really wanted, and then they still went ahead and did it when they can't go. There are some people that I've talked to that are like, they have to trade Nylander. They have to trade Nylander. They have to trade Nylander. There's a lot of those people around the league, and it's not just people on TV and talking heads and people trying to get clicks. There's a lot of people in hockey that believe that. But you can't, you're right. I mean, like you have to make yourself better in that trade. If you make yourself better, then you can trade Nylander. That's the rule.
The issue is then like you continue to kind of downgrade your biggest advantage. Like the more I thought about it as time went on, it felt like a mistake to give what you could argue was the best 1-2-3 center combination 1 year. And I think you can look at, you know, those core 4 guys. It feels like it would be a mistake to give that 2 years. And both those 2 years kind of have all these little weird complexities, like Kadri getting suspended, Nylander having like the contract situation this year with the pandemic. And like, it feels like you need to give that a little bit longer run. And that's why, like, if you want to change like substantial parts of your team, like you look at the group that's been here the last 4 years, I look at the guys, and you talked about it in your piece, I look at Kapanen, I look at Anderson. Those are the first 2 guys that come to mind for me. I think we should start with Anderson. You've made this point before the season came back, and I was kind of on the fence. I'm not on the fence anymore. I think they kind of need to figure out a solution that's better than Anderson, because I don't know how you could look at anything that happened this year or in the past years that would tell you that he can make a deep playoff run, and yet he probably still could. Like, I don't know how, I just don't get that feeling from him that he's going to be that. What do you think?
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same thing with what I said with Nylander, is that you got to feel fairly confident that the replacement that you're putting in there is, and this is an area where I think that, you know, if your analytics are good, if your in goalie analytics are a whole different thing, if they're good, you should be able to find some value in goal. You know, it's one of those areas where Carey Price is making $10 million and Bobrovsky's making, I think he's making $10 million, and there's all these terrible goalie contracts around the league. There's so many of them. And if you're going to be a smart team where you have people outperform their contracts, I think goal is an area where that makes sense. And I would say Anderson's kind of performed at his contract for the most part in Toronto, and then this year was his weakest year, and I kind of wonder if Anderson should only be a tandem goaltender. You know, like it feels like the Leafs have played him too much. They haven't given him enough support. And he's making $5 million. I mean, if Anderson comes back, this is his last year. So the question is, do you want this last year of lame duck Anderson making $5 million, giving you what you've seen him play 4 years? He's probably not going to outperform what he's done the last 4 years. I think we know what Anderson is. Do you want to try? You're going to have to move on from Anderson for sure after next year. Like from what I can tell, it doesn't sound like there's any chance he's coming back. Why not explore some alternatives now and see if there are any that you like?
Well, you could just go into next year and let's say you sign Thomas Greisch for, I don't know, not
3.5
less. there's so many goalies out there. Like, I don't even know what these guys can demand. I feel like you might be able to talk yourself into, we can get the same, not maybe not like as good, but we can get close to the same value from Greiss during the regular season. And then we'll just kind of see who's playing better, Greiss or Campbell, and kind of take that chance. Because, like, even if Anderson, let's say Anderson has like an amazing regular season next year, if I was them, I would still have the same concerns that I have right now about Anderson in the playoffs, like that he just gets a little shaky, and that something happens, and I don't know what it is.
There's something to be said, Jonas, for having two goalies you like. Like Columbus is, that series is a perfect example where both the guys play, they both play well at different times, they trade in and out, and you win the series that way. And the Leafs have not had that option since, what's the last playoff series they went into where you like both the goalies? Like, it's, and I feel like, I don't know if Campbell's the guy for sure, but I think that you got to give him a shot. And I think you got to play him 30, 35 games.
Well, it's to your point. It's just an opportunity at maybe getting some value that you're not getting out of Anderson.
Right. Well, and then the other too, guy, Jonas, I think you can trade Anderson and get something.
I'm not sure of.
I really do.
I don't know.
He only makes $5 million. There's going to be a team that needs a starting goalie.
There's 5 million starting goalies out there in free agency. Why wouldn't I just sign a guy?
Really, there aren't that many that have Andersons that have won as many games as he has. There's not that many.
I'm going to pull it up very quickly. Okay. Yes, there are.
Give me the list of UFA goalies that have won as many games as Anderson in the last 4 years.
Okay, you ready?
It's going to be like two guys.
It's not.
And they're all going to be a lot older than Anderson. No, that have won as many games as he has.
Okay, I'll give you some names. Braden Holtby, Corey Crawford. Why isn't it sorting by goalies? This is frustrating. But that's two right there. Robin Leonard. Who else do you want me to keep naming?
Yeah, but I don't. But some of these guys haven't won as many games as Anderson in the last 4 years.
I don't think that is that true. Really?
Yes. How many games has Leonard won in the last 4 years?
You've told me that Leonard is better. Like, we're just judging this now on wins?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, I think he's going to have value in the marketplace. And the reason is that he's a guy that's been a number one for a long time and won a lot of games.
Jacob Markstrom, Matt Murray's an RFA. Thomas Greiss, I mentioned. You're right. Cam Talbot, like, I don't know.
Another team's going to look at it, though, and say, Anderson's one of the best three or four guys available, and we like him, and we'll give you X for him.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and that's something you have to consider. And then, so the only other guy that I think you seriously look at now is Kapanen. You made this point in your story, and I've really wavered back and forth. I'm not sure, like, that he's going to... I mean, it's hard. You need to be careful to, like, not judge a guy after his worst year, or not his worst year, but a bad year. But it's hard to see, like, where he gets so much better from here. And yet, like, I don't know, he's 6 whatever. He's really fast. He can score.
Yeah, but I think that he's maybe a guy that's passing the eye test, but, like, kind of failing the results test a little bit. And it's not that Kapanen's a bad player. It's just, I think in terms of hockey IQ and his ability to make plays when he's playing with more talented line mates are going to mean that he's just a third line guy and a penalty killer. And the reason that Kapanen stands out to me is I think you can get a really good asset in return for him. It's not that I don't like him at all. It's not that his contract's outrageous or anything like that. I just think that other teams are going to be willing to give you something really good for him. Now, if that's not the case, then I don't trade him.
It's almost like he's empty calories a little bit. Like you're talking about, like, it looks really like the package. Like, you're like, wow, like, he's so fast and he's big and, like, but that feels replaceable. And with all their forwards, like, they have, like you mentioned, like, you can put together their forward group pretty easily without him. And I don't know that you're losing that much.
Well, and I just look at free agency, and maybe they'll be able to find a guy that makes 1.8 or something in free agency, where guys are going to get squeezed, that can give you similar results.
And maybe, who's a little different from what you got.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I mean, like, if they want to change, there's been hints that they want to change stylistically the way the team plays and introduce some more Muzzin and Kyle Clifford like players. You can only do that if you move guys out. Like, we can't sit here and say we like this guy and we like that guy and we don't want to trade Nylander. We don't want to trade this guy. You gotta trade somebody to change things.
All right. I should add, James, that the 2-minute advantage with Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside, they're doing their normal podcast on Wednesdays, and then Scott is doing a daily playoff edition Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, released at 10 a.m. throughout the playoffs. So check that out. Anything else you want to mention before we scoot?
We're going to keep podcasting. You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if we'll do every single week because, you know, there's going to be some breaks and things, but we're going to keep the show going. So, you know, thanks as always for subscribing. Thanks for reading and, you know, give us your feedback on Twitter, in the comments on the podcast and on the website. Cause you know, we read a lot of them and, you know, we're going to be digging in here for a lot of interesting off season content. So it's a long way, Jonas, until the draft and free agency in October 9th.
TheAthletic.com/LeafReport, right, James? 40% yep. off.
Spread that link around. Get it tattooed on your forehead. Wear it to the next outing that you go to, socially distanced, and sell some subscriptions for us.
Okay, well, so like James said, thank you for listening. We will be back to delve more into this interesting offseason very soon.